Hello, hello. Tell us about our drink that we're having here.
Oh, okay. This is Guaraná. It's a Brazilian berry. Grows in, I think, the Amazon. I got hooked on it when I was 16 and
thought. When you're in the Amazon?
Yeah, I thought I was going to move to the Amazon. And I used to drink it like crazy. And I have a picture of me somewhere in a hammock in the jungle, just with a big old bottle of Bare, which is a brand of Guaraná, kind of like cola.
Yeah.
So there's different brands, Hea, Bare. I forget what this one's called. This is the one you can find in America. But
where do you find it?
I find it in Miami.
Okay.
I can find it in like Melbourne if I go visit
dad.
I'm going to try the El Supermercado here and see if they have it. And see if they have it. But it's a Brazilian drink. And you can't get Hale or Bade here, but you can get this. I forget what it's called. It's just with a G and it's green. I know that label a mile away.
I was pumped. We you know, took it back to you from your cabin and you gave us one of them. They're so good.
It's a great drink for swimming and all that because it gives you tons of energy. And that's why I thought in the Amazon, I had insomnia, and I thought it was because I was nervous because it was pitch dark and I heard animal sounds. But it was probably because I was guzzling Guaraná. And if you don't know Brazil or Portuguese, you would read it as Guaraná. And so you'll see it in a lot of like Red Bulls and a lot of energy drinks.
Oh, it's like a piece from a lot of that.
Right.
But it doesn't make you angry.
You'll see taurine and all these things, and you'll see what it looks like, Guaraná or something like that. I don't know how Americans pronounce it.
I typically don't read the labels on energy drinks because they make me concerned.
Right.
I just drink it, right? I don't read
just
it.
Just drink it.
Yeah, right. And just let it give me.
That's why I do the Starbucks double shots.
Starbucks double shots is definitely something I need to try for next semester.
If you're driving
Red
long
Bulls
haul,
were a lot.
Sip a little bit.
And just
every half an hour. I think Air Force did a study on that.
Really?
If you do coffee intake every half an hour or hour, I forget what it was, then you can sustain your ability to focus much longer than if you did not partake in a caffeinated beverage. So,
well, if anybody knows about energy, it's the Air Force. So
they do. They got long haul flights.
They got real long haul.
You can't just doze off flying an F-16, man.
To places we don't even know where they're going.
Those C-130s, man. That'd be a big crash.
That'd be rough.
Yeah.
Today on the show, the dyslexic dynamic. Is that the title of the article?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm doing that. I would say like progressing through the course, but progressing very slowly because I'm reading all the extra information. There is that course we talked about a couple podcasts ago about like how to teach to a dyslexic person and facilitate their learning, but not only like just to like help them pass, but help them thrive.
Okay.
So that's what this course is. It's free and it's online. I think it's made by Dyslexia.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm taking that class, but very, very slowly because there's all these resources and I'm nerdy enough to be like, oh, maybe I should read that resource.
Right.
And so one of those resources are from
I was wondering
Peru.
What that was.
Yeah sorry.
Okay. No, you're fine.
I that sound, I hear it in my truck when I drive because I always have my water bottle
because
with me.
Yeah, well, I was wondering, I was like, is it the, you know, something else that I need to take
water
care
bottle.
Of? But sorry, that was a brief technical
50-gallon water bottle that I carry with me every day. It's actually a good weapon. You know, I've got this paracord.
You can spin it around.
Spin it. Yeah,
and that paracord's not going to break.
No,
so.
It's not going to break. And then I can make it shelter. It has a whistle, too.
So you're running a little side note for Sean's survivalist water bottle because he thinks the world's going to fall apart.
Yeah, we've talked about that in previous episodes.
Exactly. Anyway.
Yeah, so this is called, you can Google it, The Dyslexic Dynamic, Why Dyslexia Can Help Meet Today's Talent Challenges. And this was done by Talent Solutions and made by Dyslexia. And so I was, not. It's not a long thing. It's maybe like... maybe 16 pages.
It's definitely was built for dyslexic
people
to read.
Lots of pictures.
Yeah, a lot of pictures.
13, so 13 pages. It's a quick read, but what it is, it's kind of an argument that not only do you need dyslexic people, but you need to change the way you assess people in general because you're weeding out dyslexic people. And then the other thing was how to recruit, how to find them.
Yep.
And so it was really exciting, and I think it builds really well on the podcast we had just a couple days ago.
Yeah,
because you were talking about how the British are saying, hey, dyslexic people could help us solve the climate
crisis.
Yes. Yeah.
And this was saying dyslexic people can help you with everything.
Right.
Right?
They're like, a better business.
Right. And it's saying that, and you and I have been talking about this for years, even before we started the show, but that machines are going to do all that technical stuff. Machines are going to do the spelling. They're going to do maybe even some of the writing, like the not the technical
even
writing.
The coding.
Yeah, the coding.
They
they're going
to
do
pretty
it.
Soon you'll just talk to an AI
yeah.
and it'll start designing for you.
Yeah. And so. They're doing art. You know, AI is doing art. Right. It's, and I'm not saying that those artistic abilities aren't going to go away from people. I'm just saying that anything that is technical that we are at this point now, the article is saying being inappropriately judged on, right? It's like spelling, different things like that, different processing problems.
Forgetting how to pronounce something.
Yeah, forget, exactly. All that is
pronouncing it.
Yeah, or all that's going to be
word recall.
Exactly. All that's going to be done by a computer. At least 50% of it is.
That's what it says.
And the, yeah, exactly. And the other 50% is soft skills.
Right.
And soft skills is something we have never, ever, in my experience in the American education system, been able to properly judge.
Mm-mm. Every and employee says they want it.
Yeah.
But nobody tests for
but
it.
But yet they still want your special resume and they want it to be all right and spell right. They're like, yeah, but we're looking for someone with that extra edge, with that, with the ability to talk. And it's like, well, you're not casting the right net.
Right.
Which is what this article is talking about.
Right. They're saying that even in the interview process, you are weeding out dyslexic people before they even get to talk to you.
Yeah.
And so that needs to change.
Well, I say that all the time when we're looking for people, right? We look for people at work and we have these resume requirements and we have all these requirements and this stuff. And it's like, we're not going to find people that are truly, and surprisingly enough, there are people that would be passionate about tires. Like there are people who be passionate about sales, but we're not going to find those people in our traditional recruiting processes. And that's why I actually had a call with my district manager about it, because we're having such a tough time getting employees about.
Really? That's so uncommon now.
Yeah. Right.
I'm just joking.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah. Where I was like, we're having trouble getting employees, which, you know, they're falling off the shelves and we can't grab one. So I was very surprised that I think he was relatively receptive of the fact that we need to try a different manners of how we approach trying to get employees.
Hmm.
Right. Because it's just money. All we do in recruiting is money. Where it's like, oh, we can get you an extra dollar. We can get you. And it's like, it's not really longevity.
No.
Right. And it depends on the position, obviously, but we're not doing anything creative. But what I was telling you when we were coming into the studio and you told me to save it was I'm worried who's reading this. Like what that audience is really just other dyslexic people,
right? I don't think
right?
so. This is Manpower Group Talent Solutions. So these are people who are actively recruiting.
Okay. Was that on the summary?
You got to read the summary.
That's the part that I missed.
No. See, I'm an academic.
Yeah.
First thing I do is read the summary, and then I read the conclusions, and then I read the middle part. And then I don't understand the whole statistical part. If that in fact wasn't in this. So that's when I asked someone who knows how to do that, like, is this relevant?
And when was this written?
This was
not long ago.
No.
Right?
Oh, shoot. 2021. Because they're saying, hey, now that you have a lack of employees.
Oh, and they talk about the pandemic.
Because of the pandemic, you got to hire people. So why not change a few things and get more dyslexic people on staff?
Yeah. And they define dyslexia, which we've done 100 times on the show.
I want to read that.
Yeah, yeah.
I
think it's great to hear all the different.
Yeah. We probably did in the early one about how it was like an inability to a lack of a, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like all like disease.
It's always, what it can't do.
This
whole article is about the transition of what you can do.
Yes. Finally.
Yeah.
And it's been a while. So what is dyslexia? It says. And I'm quoting, dyslexia influences as many as 1 in 5 people and is a genetic difference in an individual's ability to learn and process information. You notice I'm reading with my finger on
yes,
my
face. Great.
I always read that way. As a result, otherwise I just jump around and I change the sentence. As a result, dyslexic individuals have differing abilities, which is really different than what I've been, you know, what we've been talking about in the past. Here it is, with strengths in creative problem solving and communication skills. And then instead of inabilities, it says in challenges with spelling, reading, and memorizing facts. And the one part I don't like about that is memorizing facts, because I'm like a nerd. I remember a lot of weird facts, probably not dates or the names of people or what.
Oh,
you know,
I totally agree.
I have a trouble, like, what year was that? And, you know, that kind of thing. But facts in general.
And I can never get, I can never get dates on anything.
No.
Because I'm a big history guy. I think we've talked about this before. And I'm like, that happened. Like, I can tell you all the details about what happened, except when it happened and sometimes where it happened. And they're okay. Like, and then people are normally turned off. They're like, oh, well,
you don't know.
You're not telling me anything. Right. And I'm like, I mean, you're right. I'm really not giving you the key pieces of information. Right. But
like, I can't remember when my kids were, what year my kids were born. I know their birthdays.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
And you know
they
were born.
I know they
were born. You know they were born. Yeah.
And I know about what age they are.
Right.
And my trick, oh, this was funny because, you know, I've been married to Christy for a while.
Yeah.
And so that number keeps changing every year, ironically.
Yeah.
And what I've done now is when people say, how long have you been married? That's a hard question for me, not because I don't love my wife. I really love her, but I can't remember the number. So I always say now we were married in 1999. You do the math.
Yeah.
You I don't want to do the math.
Yeah, that's such a good way to do that. That's such a good trick.
Yeah. I was like, because that number doesn't change.
Yeah.
We've always been married in 1999.
Yeah.
Forever. Like that doesn't change. What might change is what year it is now and how to do the subtraction and addition or whatever it is to know what number it is
right
now. Right.
When I was 7 years old.
Right.
Yeah.
So you can just say it and it was over. It's done. Right.
That's so much better. So that's a good transition actually to the, one of the parts I really liked, which was the misreading dyslexic signals. Mm. And I think that that goes back to what we talk about classically on the show, which is people are lazy, right? People, we don't see what
you
their skills are.
You
misspelled
a simple word.
Yeah.
You don't care about this job.
Yeah, it's exactly. You don't care about this. And it's even like, in my world, and it, you don't care about this customer, or like why are you, why don't you care about this account?
You cared,
if you just
spell it right.
Yep. Yep. And it happens all the time. And it's saying more than half feel their employers have a poor or non-existent understanding of the strengths associated with dyslexia. And that's, I'm surprised honestly that it's not like 90%.
Yeah.
Like they say more than half. And I'm like, I don't think anybody knows.
No, I think people are like, yeah, I know strengths.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
and
like, I don't want to look ignorant.
It's the same thing with the other side of the statistic, which is fewer than 1 in 5 dyslexics feel their employer understands their strengths of dyslexic thinking, which doesn't actually pair well with the other statistic that I just read, right? Because it's like, well, employers are much more confident, even though it's more than half still, employers seem much more confident. There's a higher percentage of employers that think that they know about probably 20% the strengths of dyslexia, whereas almost no dyslexic thinks any employer does.
Right.
If that makes sense. You understand what I'm trying to say? Yeah.
And that's because I think there's a bias there. They're like,
yeah, that's
of course,
what I'm saying.
Of course,
it's,
I am a great employer. I recognize the strengths of my people. But if you're dyslexic, you're like, yeah, no, I don't feel that way.
Yeah. And I liked the piece because I don't think we're both pretty confident people. Mm-hmm. And I think this was cool. It talks about how because dyslexic people in this part of misreading dyslexic skills, because dyslexic people were held back for so long and they didn't get good grades and blah, blah, they enter the workforce with less confidence.
Yeah.
And I think that's fair. I think I had that and I, to a degree, right? And I think that's a little more complex than that sentence offers, right? They have less confidence maybe in succeeding traditionally, but I think that, and this might be a dyslexic thing or this might be a me thing, I was always confident of success, but I didn't know what it looked like and didn't know how people were going to recognize that, right? Because that's what it comes to when you're working for somebody, right? You want, not only do you have to believe that you're doing well, you need others to believe that you're doing well.
Yeah.
And I think I always believed, especially once I was getting out of college, that I was doing well, but I was like, I need other people to understand this again. Like that's all it was over and over, like a wave of, okay, I get it. Do you get it? I get it. Do you get
it? Yeah, and I think that might just be kind of our upbringing because
I think we
talked about this in earlier podcasts, like how many, was it like a third of the prison population are dyslexic?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because they just felt like they couldn't win.
Mm-hmm.
And so what am I going to do? I guess I'm going to rob a bank, you know?
Yeah.
I'm a creative person.
And they were smart enough to rob a bank.
Yeah.
And they were smart enough. Yeah.
You might get away with it a couple times.
Yeah.
Because you're a creative person.
They said Al Capone was probably dyslexic.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I read that the other day.
Oh, cool.
When I was doing some, because he hung around in Louisville a bit.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. But I think that's sad that that's what it comes down to. And it comes down to that a lot.
And that's, I think, a good tie into our last podcast. The British are like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Right.
Don't lock them out.
Mm-hmm.
You're making a system in which they cannot thrive.
Right.
Or even survive.
Yeah.
Most of them. And you were benefited by a great advocate.
Exactly.
And
yep. And almost nobody has that. And then you,
And then
you had several advocates, like a lot of people.
I turned 21 a couple weeks after I graduated high school.
Right, that's crazy.
I mean, I just kept going back.
Yeah,
because my vice principal would come to me, and my girlfriends would always say, "Come back to school," you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
go back to school, finish up. You could do it.
And you were like, "Nah, I'm cool. I'm busy. I was busy being in a band. Yeah, you're surfing." You know,
I wasn't surfing.
You weren't surfing yet?
No, I was skateboarding then. Oh, okay. I was surfing, but not then. I was in Atlanta.
Oh, okay. That makes
sense. So it was very different for me. But when I went to college, that's when I like all the sparks just like went off because I went to do creative stuff in college.
Right.
My graphic design job paid me to take Adobe classes.
Yeah.
And I was the best student in the class. And there were 60 students in there.
Yeah.
And I was showing them how to use a program.
Yeah.
It made sense.
And
to
you
me.
Had probably never experienced something like that?
No, it was a graphic user interface. Like when I took computer classes in the 80s, it was all DOS.
Jeez.
And so I can't even type English. How the heck am I going to use DOS?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And so like I was like, I'm never going to use computers.
Yeah.
But then the graphic user interface came out. The Macs were coming out. And Adobe was doing all these visual stuff. And I was like, oh, this makes so much sense to me. I love it. And I can teach everyone in this room how to do it because my professor is just reading the book.
Right.
And that's what I do now for a living.
That's...
I teach people the same program.
And that's amazing.
They stuck around. Well, many of them did. But
yeah,
they're still around. And they just, to me, they're fun.
Yeah.
It's like a little puzzle.
And that's how it should be.
A little visual puzzle.
Yeah. I think that... That's what the people, and I don't ever want to rag on different types of abilities to learn, but the people that do have the more linear brain, which I talk about a lot, don't have as much of that. They just don't have as much of that creative kind of fun side, right? Like they're not sitting there like, oh, this spelling is, my mom is, but most people aren't. Spelling is really fun. You know, it's like, oh, I've always been good at spelling, right?
Right. 'Cause
it's part of their... It's part of how their brain works.
Right.
I bet Christy might enjoy editing papers, though.
Oh, she does.
Exactly.
She loves it.
So
especially doctoral dissertation.
Oh, man. Yeah.
APA format.
She's
MLA
all.
Or
she's
Chicago.
Like, yeah.
Oh, she just really loves
get ready.
It.
Get ready for it.
Oh, she's fired up. She loves it.
But I think that, I don't know. I still think the dyslexic skill set. Is even after this article, reading this article, and you could maybe disagree, but it's still so broad. It's still, I think one of the reasons we're having trouble with designing, you know, systems like they're talking about where you can recruit people and you can bring the right people in with dyslexic brains. I think it is hard traditionally to balance between this person is dyslexic or this person doesn't actually care. This person might be lazy.
It could be a linear brain
that just doesn't
care about the
exactly.
Yeah, client.
Yeah, I'm
just gonna bang this thing out and be done because I want to go home.
Yeah, and then if you lean too much into this dyslexic skill set talk, you're like, oh, well, maybe he just needs a little more attention. Maybe he's dyslexic.
Because
I think I ran into that a lot.
You talked about that, in high school or college, people said I'm dyslexic, and it's like.
I don't think you are.
Feel dyslexic to
me. It's exactly right. You're just fill in adjective here, right? Fill in whatever adjective.
It just gives you more time for your tests.
Mm-hmm.
And,
you're
something.
Lazy. You're.
I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm not coming after anybody in particular. I just think that we still don't seem to have a super strong grasp on. I used to joke back in, we remember when we had Rhonda Purdy on. I talked about this, and it was like. It's almost like the trash can of learning disabilities, right? You take all these different things we have problems with and you're just like, okay, that's all dyslexia. And I like articles like this because it's starting to hone more and more of it in.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we've always been there. And I'm not.
No. Know. And it's what been 50 years now.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When I grew up in the 70s and even in the 80s and 90s, even like it was still like, does it really
90s
exist?
And early 2000s. 'Cause that's when I was going through, you know, middle school.
I was going to college and in the 90s. And that's when my aunt, diagnosed me. And yeah. I told you that. Yeah, she was you're spelling the same word three different times in this one paper. So obviously you know
what the word is.
But you don't know how to spell it, but not that you don't know
how to use it. You're also using it correctly.
And like, it's not like you misspelled it. You're misspelling it different times in different
places. I did that all day long.
So you, yeah.
There's so many times at work. Well, I work with a lot of people that are uneducated, and I want to put a caveat on that. They're very intelligent, hardworking. It's just they are untraditionally educated, right?
And got through high school, kind of thing.
Yeah,
that was my mom.
Yeah, and that's all I'm saying. I know we're on a podcast, so I try to be careful. Like, I'm not calling anybody unintelligent. They're just uneducated. Anyway, they come in to me all the time, and like, you know, you talk about your kids, you talk about blah blah, and they're like, I'm like, oh, okay, how are they, right? And they're like, oh, they're struggling in school, and they're really hard worker. And I hear the story of dyslexia a lot in the blue collar, right?
One fifth.
Yeah, exactly. And
they might have chose blue collar. That's exactly right.
And I bet you're dyslexic, and that's why you're and again, no disrespect to the profession. That's why you're changing tires. That's why you've ended up doing
you go with your hands.
I
love working with my hands.
That's why you're a mechanic. That's why. So I think I am around a lot of them, and then their kids have it, right? Because it's partially hereditary.
Right.
And they don't understand it. They don't recognize it. And so did I tell you the story about when I diagnosed someone's kid with dyslexia on a plane?
No.
So I was on a plane with this very high powered attorney. I just sat next to her and I talked to her. I was on like a 5-hour flight to somewhere. I remember talked to her for a long time. And she just started going on about her. We'd had some bourbon on the flight, started going on about her daughter. And I was like, I really think your daughter's dyslexic. And she was like, what is that?
Right.
First of all, and this was probably 7-8 years ago. And I connected her, gave her my mom's email, and they still correspond to this day about education. Some random lady, and like actually got her daughter into programs, got her like working in the right way and understands her brain so much more. And I think that they still email to this day. And I think that's amazing. Once you start to figure this thing out, just having those conversations like, hey, I don't think even a stranger coming to you and saying, I don't think your kid is stupid is going to be a light bulb, right? Because parents don't want their kids to have problems.
No,
they're gonna, but they don't want their kids to have problems, and they're going to take any support that they can get. And I think that's a fantastic example of just minorly altruistic behavior, you know, turning into from dyslexic education, turning into, you know, potentially changing a way a child learns, right? That had a mom that had no understanding of it, was very linear brain, very successful, right? Hard worker. And so doesn't get why her daughter isn't there. And this shed some light in those cracks.
Right.
And I think that's,
we need
it's
to
just
do
really
more
nice
that.
Thing. Yeah. Wanted to touch on the last bit of time we have here on what you think of these, the
our skills?
Six areas of dyslexia, the six areas of dyslexia that we excel.
I agree totally, but I thought everyone was like that.
Me too.
Yeah.
That's what I thought when I read it. So it says communicating, imagining, visualizing, exploring, connecting, and reasoning. And what's funny, when I read this, I was like, what other stuff is that?
I know. Like, how else would you think?
Yeah. I was like, what other skills are there?
Everything that, they nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
They actually nailed it. And that's so rare for me to say that with anything with dyslexia.
Yeah.
Usually I'm like, no,
that doesn't fit.
Totally
that
wrong.
Yep.
I was like, no, I thought everyone thought that way. So it's kind of like, wow. Yeah. It's like, when I was a kid, I didn't know, but my eyes were bad and my dad took me to an eye doctor and I put on glasses for the first time. And I remember the ride home and I was like, wow, you could see that. You could see that. You could see that. You know, it was like that thing.
Yeah.
Like I thought everyone saw what I saw was a big blur.
Yeah.
And with colors and things. But, you know, that's what I thought everybody saw.
Yeah.
And I think that's how this is. Like, I thought everybody saw this way. But I want to know what linear thinkers, what they think.
Yeah, that's, I want to read up.
I mean, maybe they got a couple of these or what? I don't know. Do they have all these and a little more?
What are you doing if you don't have those?
I know.
That's what I'm confused. Like, how are you
going
throughout the world?
I'll tell you. One of the.
Maybe we should ask Christy.
No, yeah. Well, I don't know. Because she has a lot of these.
Yeah.
But one of the most frustrating things You know, I have like really open-ended assignments. I do that on purpose. Because I want you to apply your interest and your passion to your project.
Right.
Like that's important to me.
Right.
I think you'll put more into it, and I think you'll inspire other people more if you do that than if I give you like a rote, like write a paper on why
this specifically this way.
Yeah. Juliet killed herself, you know, that kind of thing. Like, blah. Okay. So I give you really open-ended assignments, and I'll have a student every once in a while. And maybe that is like the classic middle of the road, linear brain.
Yeah.
Who's like, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, so, okay, well, brainstorm.
Yeah.
I love brainstorming.
Yeah. Brainstorming's great.
And I'm like just firing questions and trying to probe and see. And it's like, what do you do? Nothing. What do you watch? Nothing. What do you do? Play video games. Can you do it on video games? No. You know, like that kind of thing.
No.
I just watch video games. Like, you know, so it's like, can you do it on what you watch video
games? I think that's partially generational too. Of like, I think that millennials, which is part of my generation, are bad at
maybe
open-ended stuff. I'm not, but I've read articles before about
started teaching now. I've always had a student like that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's always like, don't know.
Yeah. The first class I taught, I don't remember what year it was. It was in the early 2000s. Yeah. Yeah. 2001.
Wow.
I taught a journalism class, and we would go to a city council meeting and take notes. And then we would come back and brainstorm like, okay, so what's
interesting. Yeah. What stuck out.
And so you always have this, like, I don't know nothing. You're like, are you serious?
Yeah. We were there for
stories here. We were there for 2 hours. Didn't you hear the mayor say that thing?
Yeah.
Didn't you hear this?
Is that not interesting?
Like, come on. We got to dig.
And those people are accountants.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what they are.
Yeah, I'm just, yeah.
They're not dyslexic.
They're not dyslexic. I think
promise you.
I think I can point that out in a second where I'm like, you're not thinking this.
So maybe that's the next step. You have to sit in front of a board of dyslexia to pass your dyslexia
examination. Can we start that somewhere?
Board
of dyslexia?
Like the... with the Jedi Knights, mm-hmm. the council, and they're like, no, we will not train you.
We have the hoods.
I sense so much fear in this Padawan.
I think that would be definitely the right way to go about it. And then it kind of touched on some things like skills for today's workplace. A lot of stuff we've talked about already. How does that fit in to the actual workforce?
Is this weird, like, case thing? I don't get it. And I was not interested.
This was not made by dyslexic.
I was not curious about this. I looked at it and I was like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. So what Sean's describing, there's this, weird escalator thing, double decker escalator, talking about, what's hot and what's not, like, so what's good for, I guess, dyslexic education
or what's good for companies, I think.
Yeah. And then what's companies don't need to be doing, like, but they put it in this weird chart that was not designed by a dyslexic person.
Like, yeah, I don't know. I didn't get that.
Yeah. I didn't look a lot into it,
but like, it looks like the dyslexic people are going up and the linear minds are going down.
But the guess linear,
and I don't like that either. I don't like judgmental.
And the linear minds, like, one of them says general and operations manager, like going down in like what's not popular. And I'm like,
that's the need that companies have.
Yeah.
Like what they need is more remote. I can't read this. Contact center workers.
Yeah.
I don't
know. You can look at it for yourself.
App developers. That'd be cool.
Yeah. I'm surprised you haven't made an app yet.
It's too much coding.
Yeah.
When it becomes more visual,
like you can talk the code. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I love visual stuff.
Make some ping pong app.
Right. So we've got
a
couple minutes.
1 minute.
So let's go with that. I had that oh wow at the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You see that?
Yeah. Throw that oh wow in there and then that finishes off. Yeah. We got 45 seconds.
First, one thing we talked about before, technology is helping to harness the skills of those with dyslexia. That is important. And it's going to transform the way businesses run. And so it says at the end, we need to identify dyslexic skills, which we really need to do. And then we need to remove biases.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of ways to do that. So I'm really excited. If you are dyslexic and you're young, you are entering an amazing new world.
Yep. And people that are actually creating articles and focusing on people with dyslexia.
Congrats.
Well, yeah, we did. That was fantastic.
Take over the world.
Take over the world.